Hello, and welcome to the Computing Conversations column. This column is from the September 2014 issue of IEEE Computer and is titled, Ni Quanar, Bringing the Internet to Africa. There is supporting video material for this column that you can find in the IEEE Computer Society YouTube channel or in the IEEE Digital Library. I'm the editor of the column, and I'm Charles Severance from the University of Michigan. In the early 1990s, African countries started upgrading from store and forward networks such as FidoNet and UUCP to always-on internet connections. I spoke with Ni Quanar, a founding member of the Department of Computer Science at the University of Cape Coast in Ghana, about what it took to build a community around internet technology in Africa. As the internet spread around the world in the late 1980s, the first connections were typically to universities. But for many countries in Africa, the interest in the internet was initially limited to a relatively small group. Quanar didn't want to wait for the government or his university, so he took the initiative and started working through a small private company to bring the first internet connection to Ghana.
Government was not aware, government was not interested, and so the private sector took it up. But the private sector we're discussing is me. I'm not exactly private sector, I'm academic. Only I did this job through the private sector.
Yeah.
Meaning that I realized that you can wait for the university forever because they depend on government. And you can wait for the government forever, they have no clue. So I actually have been known to have said publicly that I cannot wait for the government to do it for the country. So I know how to do it. I will do it no matter how small it is, just to make the point that we are able to do it. In so doing, maybe I can create an avalanche that will carry through the momentum. And that is what I tried to do.
Elsewhere in Africa, different models prevailed for bringing the internet connections. In Egypt, government was interested and involved early on. In South Africa, strong academic leadership made a difference. In West Africa, Quanar encouraged and helped small private sector efforts throughout the region.
Because I also went around helping Togo, private sector, helping Gambia, private sector, and so on. Even Nigeria, giving them intellectual property so they could also begin to do it. So it became private sector helping private sector, but for the common good, because we really felt that we had to go together. Otherwise, things would just disappear. I allowed some countries to transit their data through me, and Togo was an example. But in other places, I actually sent engineers to go and install nodes for them, and Gambia was an example. In other cases, I actually trained people like Swaziland. They brought the telcos people to me to be trained. In other cases, we did consulting services to help Ethiopia and so on and so forth.
Just like anywhere else in the world, the first step was simply to get connected one way or the other. Once people found out about the internet, they were in a hurry to get there by any means possible.
And that one was a mad rush, but it was a good community activity in the sense that we wanted to help each other. And that has continued till now, because now I actually run the African Network Operators Group. And the principal function of this group is to sort of help operators support themselves. And usually we support ourselves with building our capacity in many different areas, mostly in infrastructure-related things like routing type of issues or server services type of issues for those who want to build information resources.
AFNOG is home to most of the African continent's technical community. The group meets 2 weeks each year. 1 week is dedicated to training and workshops, and the following week involves discussions around governance, research, and other activities. One of the main goals is to continue to grow the community and build network talent across Africa.
Once a year, we all congregate, and it's supposed to be service to community type of thing, in that nobody gets paid. But we try to raise money for the student participants to come. And we've been getting funding. Cisco's been a regular funding source. We've got funding from IDRC, Internet Society, Francophonie, and a whole number of others. But over time, we're trying to change our program so that we become more self-sustaining. So participants who are coming in from, let's say, operators, telcos, and so on, we insist that they pay more of their way so that we can raise funding for academic and research people to participate and so on.
Once initial connectivity was in place for these countries, a whole range of scaling, deployment, and policy issues became the focus. AFNOG functioned from the beginning as an incubator for the governance efforts, such as the Africa Top-Level Domain Organization. The Internet's built on Internet protocol addresses. Their careful management and coordination is necessary to make sure that packets are properly routed between systems connected to the Internet anywhere in the world. The first IP addresses for those early connections on the African continent were managed in an ad hoc manner, with each country getting address blocks from one of the other four regional Internet registries, North America, South and Central America, Europe, and Asia Pacific. As the Internet in Africa matured, it was important for Africans to take over this important network management task. AFRINIC would be the world's fifth regional Internet registry. But it was important that the entire continent be a single registry regardless of the country and political boundaries. Operating regional Internet registry requires a great deal of agreement, technical know-how, and organizational capability.
The particular case about the NIC was interesting in that it took us 10 years to get to accreditation. Of course, in the beginning, we actually didn't know what it was. We knew it was very important. And for engineers, we knew that that was what to focus on, none of the other things. So we began to build consensus around it.
In the mid-1990s, when there were a few connections in each country and most of the operators knew each other, it seemed like a relatively simple matter to create AFRINIC. But as Internet connectivity in Africa expanded, new stakeholders kept joining the discussion. It was clear that more structure was needed, so the people involved in the creation of AFRINIC switched from an informal process to a more formal one in 1998.
But we realized that we had to build something more than just casual meeting. So we went deliberately to Cotonou to agree on specifics. And the specifics was who becomes a member of the board. And we decided to do it geographically. Okay, so that we don't get too much caught into why is that there are so many people from the north and nobody from the south. So we say, okay, each one of the sub-regions gets to elect one person. So it's the members who elect that person. And that person will serve for a period of 1 to 3 years, depending on the staggering.
The effort to create a formal legal structure for AFRINIC continued, but was repeatedly set back as connectivity exploded in the late 90s. John Postel administered the Worldwide Internet Assigned Numbers Authority and was a great supporter of AFRINIC's formation. He and Quainer were close friends.
And he had agreed that, just do it. You have to do it. It has to happen. So I invited them all to a meeting with the African engineers and everything. And suddenly somebody got up and said, No. Why don't we share it up into the countries and have us all go our separate ways? And I mean, at that point, I thought that was the end of the world. And to be honest with you, I've never felt so ashamed because I was a bit of an interface between the African technical community and the global community. I knew John Postel myself personally. And they've come to sort of help me. But my people were not ready. So all John could say to me was, get your people ready, and you will have it.
The efforts to build AFRINIC continued, and it was formally recognized as an RIR for the African continent in April 2005. But its struggle was not without its consequences.
In 10 years, I would have upset a lot of people. And this could be real in the sense that the three registries had to give up something for AFRINIC to exist. So it's inevitable that I would have made a number of people in those three registries uncomfortable. So for me, it was obvious I could not continue in the same capacity.
Quainer also feared that his leadership might be a barrier to the broader involvement of the more recent participants. He felt the need for a fresh start as AFRINIC was being formed.
If I were to stay there, I'll get less participation. I'll have less motivation for people to, make an effort. And what I needed more was more people making effort than just one person driving things. Because I knew that the space was so large that even if I had nothing to do with these things, there was plenty for me to do. So the strategic thinking was find a way to exit without telling anybody. Make sure you don't give out too much information for people to capitalize and game on it. So everybody thought I was indeed going to be the next official chair, not the startup chair, but the official chair. And I let them think so. But when it came to the board meeting, I decided to dissolve the board, and I got vote for it. And then I decided I would not run again.
At the moment when Afrinic was legally transitioning from its startup board and chairman to its first official board and chair, Quaynor dissolved the board and resigned as chair. He didn't run for re-election and encouraged many other longtime leaders in the movement to step aside and allow new leaders to emerge.
But that created a certain flow of maybe new entrants wanting to contribute service to the community. And that has continued till now. And I think that that has been a very good thing for Africa.
The story of bringing the internet to Africa is one of cooperation and collaboration for the common good. One of the benefits of the internet is that it crosses political, geographical, business, and legal boundaries and brings people together to find out what they have in common. This column is from the September 2014 issue of IEEE Computer and is titled Ni Quaynor, Bringing the Internet to Africa. There is supporting video material for this column that you can find in the IEEE Computer Society YouTube channel or in the IEEE Digital Library. I'm the editor of the column, and I'm Charles Severance from the University of Michigan.